Chapter 14. It was late, and I was more than ready for bed, but a burning curiosity spurred me forward. So Amreel and I worked our way toward the tunnels of the Lost Dwarves. I had the bag of crystal shards in hand, and I hoped it'd be enough to get the dwarves to talk to us. I was fairly sure the four bearded men left in the tunnels were a few generations removed from those who'd originally left the gloom, but they might still have valuable information that could help me. As the horned woman and I walked through the abandoned halls of the Lost Dwarves, our feet echoed loudly off the parquet floors. The architecture reminded me of ancient human civilizations, whose works outlasted them by thousands of years. There were some rooms where the ceilings were lost in complete darkness, and tall, carved pillars rose to be lost in the shadows above. I wondered how long it had taken to carve out such spaces, or lay the small, multicolored tiles on the floor that fitted together so tightly they hadn't moved a millimeter in centuries. We passed through the old market again, not far from the passages where the last of the lost tribe of dwarves lived, and I tried to imagine what it would have looked like filled with merchants and tradespeople. When we finally got to the living quarters of the dwarves, I hefted the burlap bag of crystals over my shoulder and took a deep breath.
"Do you think they'll even speak to us?"
Amreel asked as she looked at the golden glow of light coming from down the corridor from the dwarves' living space. "I hope so." I shrugged and then I chuckled. I mean, they gave me the ring, and they've only had the four of themselves to talk to for God only knows how long. You'd think they'd be keen to meet new people by now. Amreel and I slowly walked through the archway that led into the dwarves' workspace, and from the corridor, I could hear the scraps and thuds of tools, as well as the tinkling of glass or ceramics, and the quiet murmurs of conversation. "Hello?" I called out to announce my presence. I didn't want the dwarves thinking I was trying to sneak up on them. Then the red-skinned woman and I rounded the archway, and I could see Becklin, the shorter one with the well-kept red beard, working at what looked like a chemistry set. There were long glass tubes connecting orb-like bottles, and small burners heated colorful liquids that would bubble up and continue down the lacework of tubes. It all looked wildly complicated. Torek was at another table, filling small pieces of metal, even though his meaty hands and broad shoulders looked incompatible with such a delicate task. The big dwarf had tucked his long, dark beard into his shirt to keep it out of the way, and something like a jeweler's loop covered one of his eyes. The two dwarves looked up when I'd spoken, but I didn't see Sagor or Dorim. Torek scowled at us and set down his tools, but Becklin just looked curious.
"What do you want?"
Torek said in a gruff voice as he pulled his beard out of his shirt and smoothed it with his hands. "I would like to speak to Sagor," I said, since I figured he'd seemed the most receptive to me. "And I brought a peace offering."
"I'm here,"
I heard Sagor's voice say. I looked around and saw the insanely old dwarf come from behind some partitions on the far side of the room. Surprisingly, Sagor was on his feet and walking toward me, so I looked down at the leg that had been caught in the bear trap and saw the white-bearded man wore a strange metal contraption around it. It looked sort of like a brace that wrapped around the old dwarf's leg and had hinges at the knee and ankle joints, and little puffs of vapor would periodically release from valves along the device as Sagor walked. Yet another example of the dwarves' incredible ingenuity. "Hello, I'm glad to see you're looking better," I said with a smile.
"What has brought you back to us so soon, Edahil?"
the ancient dwarf asked in a pleasant tone.
"They probably want to finish the job,"
Dorim interrupted as I opened my mouth to answer. The iron-gray-haired dwarf came around the same partition that Sagor had, and he was wearing a leather apron over his gray tunic.
"If I wanted you dead, friend Dorim,"
Amreela replied in a falsely sweet voice,
"I would have slipped through the shadows, and you would have hit the ground before your companions even realized you were dead."
"Devil woman,"
Dorim muttered under his breath as he glowered at the Zinkari. "I was hoping we could talk," I said as I focused on Sagor. "There are things going on in the gloom that could eventually affect us all, and I thought you all might want to know things that could help us cut off the trouble before it starts." Sagor pulled up a stool from one of his work tables, sat, and stroked his beard as he looked at me like he would listen to what I had to say. But Torek and Dorim seemed less pleased. The big, black-bearded dwarf crossed his arms, while the one in the gray tunic shook his head.
"Whatever foolishness is happening in the gloom is no concern of ours,"
Dorm said as he stubbornly put up his hands.
Centuries worth of crises have come and gone, and yet it has never touched us here. I, for one, am for keeping it that way.
The leader of a night elf tribe might be working with some kind of demon lord to get all of the gloom under his control, I said, while still staring at Sagor. The old dwarf's face looked troubled as he soaked in this information, but the others huffed or scoffed, so I ignored them. I'm not asking you to help intervene, I continued as I set the burlap sack on the table next to Sagor. I just need to know what you know about demon lords, and how someone would go about proving a night elf chief had made a deal with one.
There would definitely be physical evidence of any deal a demon lord has entered into,
Becklin suddenly said from right next to me, which caused me to start. The small dwarf had come to stand at my side without making a sound, and now he reached out a curious finger to poke at my Galil ace.
What is this?
Becklin asked as he flicked some red hair out of his face and studied my rifle with fascination. It's called a rifle, I replied. It's a machine a bit like a crossbow that fires metal projectiles called bullets and kills things. I looked around and saw Becklin's question had caught the interest of the other dwarves, who were craning their necks to see my gun. Maybe this was my way into their good graces, so I took the Galil in both hands while minding to keep my finger off the trigger. See, I said, and I made a bit of a show explaining the AK to Becklin. These are bullets. I took the magazine out of my pocket, where I'd stashed it before Bakoth took it earlier in the day, and held it up for the dwarves to see. This magazine slips in here. I put the mag back in my pocket and then pointed to where it fit into the rifle. I didn't want to actually load the gun while showing it to the dwarves for the sake of safety. Then you pull back the action here, and you push it back to load a bullet. I continued as I pulled back the action and held the rifle so Becklin and the others could see inside the chamber. Then a long rod inside of there is triggered when you squeeze this here. I pointed to the trigger. That hits the back of the bullet casing, causes fire to ignite the explosive powder kept inside of the brass casing, and sends the bullet out of the barrel at a high speed. I finished up. Like an arrow, but way better and with a much greater range.
May I see one of the bullets?
Becklin asked in an almost reverent tone. Sure, I said, and reached into my pocket where I had put the magazine. Here you go. I slipped one of the rounds out of the magazine and handed it to the small dwarf, who took the bullet and looked at it closely, while he turned it this way and that. Torek and Dorim came up next to Becklin and tried to get a good look at the round too. I noticed Sagor was also trying to get a look from his stool, so I slipped another bullet out and handed it to the oldest dwarf. This part has a combustible powder in it, I said as I pointed at the copper casing, which propels the bullet when the firing pin causes it to explode and shoot out of the barrel.
How far away can a bullet go?
Torek asked in his rumbling voice. That depends on a lot of factors, I shrugged. But in general, I can probably hit a target around 200 yards away with a fair degree of accuracy. There were some thoughtful grunts and nods of approval from the dwarves, and only Dorim seemed unimpressed, but I got the feeling that had more to do with his stubborn determination not to like me more than anything else.
An interesting piece of engineering,
Sagor said with a sage-like smile as he watched the others warming up to me.
Is this the peace offering you mentioned?
Sorry, but no, I said with a regretful smile and then gestured to the burlap sack on the table. This is what Amreel and I brought you.
They are unprocessed crystal shards from the Dolrath territory,
the red-skinned woman said as she opened the bag and pulled out a larger chunk of crystal.
We thought you might be able to use them.
The we in Amreela's statement was a little generous, considering she was reluctant to even give up the crystals, but I let it go without commenting.
Raw elemental crystals?
Becklin gasped, but Dorim elbowed him and gave the smaller dwarf a reproving glance.
We might have a use for him,
the gray-haired dwarf said in a reserved tone.
But what do you want in exchange for him?
Nothing, at least not tangibly, I said as I lowered the Galil. But I'm still hoping you all will help me. Becklin here said that there'd be some kind of physical proof if Ursinger, the Yinni chief, made a deal with a demon. That's exactly the kind of information I was hoping for.
Why don't you ask your half-breed?
Dorm asked as he eyed Amrila.
If I knew, don't you think I would have told him already?
The horned woman spat back.
No one in the gloom or the twilight has seen a demon lord in generations. Supposedly the Yeni chiefs have a means to keep him bound in the deeper dark, but I wasn't even sure if those legends were true until recently. All that knowledge would be held by the Yeni chief, or maybe some of their priests, and they're not likely to share it with us.
Really?
Sagor spoke for the first time in a while, and let out a sigh.
What else do we have to do, brothers?
The dwarves, Amrila and I all looked at the white-bearded dwarf, and Sagor had a wry smile on his face as he stared back at all of us.
We've spent centuries tinkering with the same old experiments.
The old dwarf continued.
Repairing and maintaining the machines left by our ancestors. Surely we can spare a few moments for Eddie Hill. After all, when we're gone, these holes will be his. We have no heirs to leave our legacy to.
There was a moment of pensive silence as the three other dwarves thought about what Sagor said, and the white-bearded dwarf caught my eye and winked.
The type of token required would depend on the deal this Arsinger made,
Dorm finally said in a thoughtful tone.
It could be an object or a contract signed by both parties.
I would have to consult some text to be more specific. But either way, the Yeni chief would have to be fooled to accept any deal with a demon that powerful.
Why? I asked the dwarf in the grey tunic.
It's true he'd be granted power, influence, minions, whatever he asked for.
Doran replied as he started to look over the crystals in the sack and sorted them by size and color on the table.
But it will only last for as long as the demon found him useful. Then the demon lord will likely exploit some loophole in the contract and destroy the chief.
Well, I rubbed my chin as I thought out loud. What does the demon lord get out of it? Erzinger's soul?
No.
Sagor chuckled.
This is not a children's bedtime story. If I had to guess, the demon has likely found what he thinks is a way out of bondage. If the Yeni are the ones who keep him bound to the deeper dark, then he's almost certainly planning a way to get out.
The gods forbid,
little Becklin said as he quietly turned the bullet over in his hand. I thought about the kind of arrogance it would take to enter into that kind of deal, but it also tracked with everything I'd heard about the mad Yeni chief. Still, after encountering the lesser demon in the Dolrath territory, my mind reeled back from the idea of what a demon lord would be like. If that was the lesser version, what was the powered-up final form version like? I decided it was best to focus on the problem at hand, and hopefully nip the other problem in the bud before we got to releasing the fucking Balrog.
Maybe we can help with more than just information,
Sagor said, and broke me out of my reverie.
We've not had access to uncut elemental crystals in quite some time. It might be an interesting exercise for us to use to make ammunition for your rifle.
What do you mean? I asked with a raised eyebrow.
The tips of these,
the white-haired dwarf said as he held up the bullet in his hand.
They're copper, correct?
Yeah, I replied. With a lead core.
We might be able to treat some metal.
Becklin chimed in as he picked up on Sagor's thoughts.
You could make bullets with special properties.
What kind of properties? I asked.
What do you need?
Sagor asked. Well, I replied in a thoughtful tone. If I'm making a wish list, let's start with whatever can hurt a demon.
You're not thinking about going against the demon lord directly?
Dorm snorted.
Are you?
No. I shook my head and raised my hands. I meant for a lesser demon, but if you've got something that can take out a demon lord, I'd take it.
There is a lot of fight in this one,
Torek said as he jerked his bearded chin at me. And then he let out a deep, resonant laugh.
Oh, ho, ho, ho! I like 'em!
The muscular dwarf smiled in approval, but I could see Dorum visibly roll his eyes.
A place to start is the lesser demon,
Amrila said as she casually looked over some of the tools on the table next to us.
There is one loose in the Dolrath territory.
Could you make bullets that would be effective against something like that? I asked Sagor. Because when I shot at the thing last time, it just seemed to absorb the attacks.
It could be possible,
the oldest dwarf said as he thoughtfully stroked his beard.
We will need more information.
And to do a great deal of research.
Dorum complained.
But it's not as if we've anything better to do.
Sagor continued, and he scowled at the grey-bearded dwarf for the interruption.
Our resources are not what they once were, but with these crystal shards, I think we'll be able to work something up.
Could we have a demonstration of the weapon?
Becklin asked in his high tenor voice. The small dwarf looked up at me with an eager look in his eyes, and the three others nodded and made grunts and murmurs of approval. Sure, I replied, but it's very loud and pretty destructive. We probably shouldn't do it in here. And you all will need cloth or something to put in your ears to protect your hearing. I'll need a target, too. Something you don't care about if it gets ruined.
I think I have just the thing,
Torek said with a sly grin. A few minutes later, Amrila, the dwarves, and I were gathered in a plain stone chamber that had empty metal brackets lining the walls. There were several of the strange lanterns giving off their golden light hung around the room, and as I put a loaded mag in my rifle, the dwarves stuffed something that looked like cotton balls in their ears. Meanwhile, Torek brought in something like an overstuffed scarecrow and set it in the center of the room, and as the black-bearded dwarf came over to stand next to the others, Dorum handed him some cotton to put in his ears, while Amrila and I put on our badass headphones. I squared myself in front of the dummy, took a proper stance, and lifted the Galil up to my shoulder. Then I took a deep breath as I aimed and squeezed the trigger and fired. The bullet flew from the gun with a loud report that echoed off the stone walls as the projectile ripped through the head of the dummy. But of course, my pro-X's muted all sound, and all I felt was the slight echo of the rifle fire a few moments later in my chest. There was a burst of what looked like sawdust coming out of the back of the dummy's head, which then slowly collapsed as the coarse powder poured out in a steady stream. I shot again, this time at the trunk of the dummy, and put three holes into its chest in rapid succession. There were three puffs of light brown dust, followed by three little streams of sawdust, and the body of the dummy deflated and was now held up only by the wooden poles that made up the inner structure. I smiled and pulled off my headphones as I looked over at the four dwarves. Becklin had his hands over his ears on top of the cotton plugs, but then he started to clap enthusiastically once he realized the demonstration was over. A look of stunned amazement covered Zagor's face as he watched the last of the sawdust pour out of the dummy, and Torek stood nodding stoically with his beefy arms crossed, while Dorum bent down to pick up one of the casings that had been ejected from the Galil. The dwarf in the gray tunic held up the casing and turned it over in his stubby fingers, and I was surprised he was able to handle the spent casing so soon after it had been fired. The metal would still be pretty hot, and I wondered what kind of calluses the gray-bearded dwarf must have had. What do you think? I asked with a grin as the dwarf started to pull the cotton from their ears.
Impressive!
Torek rumbled, and he walked over to the dummy for a closer look and kicked at the sawdust now covering the floor.
Simply magnificent!
Becklin grinned up at me, and I saw the little dwarf had also picked up one of the smoking hot casings. What the hell kind of asbestos skin did these stout guys have? Torek went over to the stone walls behind the dummy, and four little chunks were missing from the dark stonework. The bullets had sailed right through the soft body of the dummy and must have hit the stone walls. But I guess the sawdust must have slowed the bullets enough to prevent any ricochets. If you're serious about making bullets for me, I said as I turned to Sagor, I can get some of these casings and a machine that loads the bullets into them. And some gunpowder, of course. All you'll need to do is make the lead part to go in here. I pointed at the hollow top of the casing in Becklin's little hand, and the small dwarf looked at the empty casing and then pulled the bullet I'd handed him earlier out of his pocket to compare the two.
We'll need to make measurements,
the tiny dwarf squeaked.
But that's simple enough. The hard part will be combining the lead with the elemental crystals.
If you bring us these things, then I believe we can make you bullets that could kill a lesser demon,
Sagor said, and he nodded his head as the idea caught in his imagination.
Tell me,
Becklin asked as he looked back up at me.
What did the demon look like? What characteristics did it have? This will determine what elements we'll need to imbue the metal with.
It shrouds itself with a shadow-like smoke,
Amrila said with a shudder as she remembered the spectral shape of the demon. But when I shone my light on it, I added, It looked like a moving corpse. Its skin looked rotted, and it smelled like death. But the light also made it disappear, so that was good, I guess.
It even seemed to avoid the light of the mushrooms.
The horned woman agreed.
A shade, Doram said, and his eyes went wide. Of all the lesser demons to encounter, that is one of the worst.
I'd hate to meet a greater demon, then, I chuckled.
The term lesser has more to do with the thing's level of intelligence and animus than its abilities or power,
Sagor said in a serious tone.
The more intelligent and cunning the demon, the higher it is in the hierarchy of infernal races.
But you think you can make me something that can hurt it? I asked eagerly.
Most likely,
Doram said, and his tone was more stern than antagonistic this time.
But the problem is we'll have no way to test out our experiment other than you using them against the creature. If by chance they do not work, it would be a great risk.
I'm willing to try, I shrugged. And I know light hurts it, or weakens it, so we'll have a backup if the bullets don't work.
Give us a few days,
Torek said.
I'm sure we'll come up with something.
All right, I grinned. Then in a day or two, I'll bring you the supplies you'll need to make the rounds. Amreel and I said our goodbyes to the dwarves and headed back to the surface and home for some much-needed rest. But I was reinvigorated by the idea that I could soon have magical bullets that could kill a demon. I was already planning my trip to the gun store.